What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/new book and get your copy today.
Sal, whenever you get a chance to spend time with a guy that's, you know, done as much as Ken McElroy has, I mean, I think he said he's upwards of, you know, 10 figures. That's pretty crazy. And what I loved about this interview, that he broke it down from starting in college to where he is now. And there's a couple of things that I take away from it. One is that you got to grow at every level, right? We hear it all the time. Our mindset matters.
Yes.
Right. This isn't a woo-woo thing either, right? Sometimes people are like, no, let's get to the heart. No, your mindset matters. And he said early on, he had a scarcity mindset, and that's what he had to get over. But it also is what put him in a position to learn, right? He was learning in that situation. Then he talked about, as he grew to another level, his mindset mattered. He was in a cash out world, right? And he had to grow from it. And now he's at a vision, you know, way down the road, way past his life, and thinking through what that looks like. And also, he has to grow because his mindset matters. What was the big takeaway that you have for this?
Well, I mean, it's such a pleasure and a privilege that we're speaking to the guy that Robert Kiyosaki calls his advisor, right? In real estate. Like, that's not something that just gets thrown around lightly. nobody else has that title, right? Yeah. And so for Ken to send the vision out to you as you're listening to this, it doesn't matter what your background was. It doesn't matter where you're at today. It matters on who do you need to become. And your mindset has to level up. The thing that was said without saying it in this interview, Russ, is that your network matters. The people around you matter, because that is part of what challenges your mindset, part of what brings you to the next level in your journey. And I love that Ken was able to share, I mean, really quite frankly with us, what he went through and how he's gotten to where he is. And man, I'm just encouraged by it. I know you will be too. Any last thoughts from you, Russ?
This is a great episode. I know that you're going to find plenty of value in it. And if you haven't had a chance already to connect with Ken McElroy, go to KenMcElroy.com. Lots of education, lots of other lessons to learn. Joey, let's jump in right now with our good friend Ken McElroy.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Wealth Without Wall Street tribe, I am super stoked today to introduce you to our friend, the Ken McElroy, in the house. Ken, so glad to have you.
Hey, thanks, guys. Always great to connect with you guys and see what you're up to.
Yeah, Ken, it's exciting to be able to share you with the audience. I know we got a chance last fall to spend some time out in Scottsdale with our Passive Income Mastermind. For those who've been following you kind of on a high level, right, they get to see you talking on stages and doing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in real estate, but they don't necessarily know where you started. And I got a chance recently when we were in Dallas to hear some of that story. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about kind of the entree into real estate. It may be not as glamorous as what people would have thought.
Sure. Well, I think like a lot of people, I had great parents. They were not entrepreneurial. My mom was a hairdresser. My dad was in construction. And so, at a young age, I don't know if your listeners remember this, but I would do S&H green stamps. I was, doing bottle recycling. I was doing, I had a paper route, all that shit that I was as a young man. And so, I had to make my own money always. And I was always hustling and doing, because the option of getting money from my family was zero. So, so going to school, all that stuff. So, I was doing all kinds of little crazy stuff just to try to get, milk money, I guess. So I was lucky enough to get into college because I had a wrestling scholarship. I was a decent high school wrestler. I got in. And then, of course, I'm still scrambling there trying to pay for it. My parents paid for what they could, but I was doing all these other things. I had three jobs at one time while I was still going to school. And just doing whatever I could to just try to get through school. But then I realized I wasn't that great of a wrestler. There was really not that big next level for, a wrestler out of college other than the Olympics. And so I was like, I got to figure out what I'm going to do. And I was in the business. I was in business classes. And my mind was being open, obviously, there. And then I got an opportunity to manage an apartment building from a friend of mine who said, "Hey, I got this 60-unit building, and would you manage it?" I said, "Well, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I'd be happy to try." He's like, "Well, it's free rent." And I'm like, "Okay, I'll do it." So
done. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, we're scrappy at that stage. I didn't have any savings, and I was just trying to make ends meet. And so it was. I remember $600 a month. Plus a one bedroom apartment. So I took this place over, and to me, property management was pretty common sense. You get the bad people out, you put good, replace them with good people. There's a process to that. And the bad people, of course, are the ones that were doing damage or maybe, other kinds of things. And of course not paying rent. And then also just, I grew up in construction with my dad, so I knew how to fix stuff. So I was cleaning units, painting units, renting units, vacuuming the building, all that stuff. And I was doing it all. And the owner came one day about 3 or 4 months later. He's like, "Man, like, nice job. Turn around this building. It's full. It's got, we're collecting more than we've ever done, and the expenses are being managed." And with a scarcity mindset at the time, I was trying to figure out how to do things for less, and I was just doing it innately. I was doing it because that's the way I grew up. And he was like, "Holy crap, like, this is incredible." And I was like, "Man, I'm on the wrong side of the desk." I literally was like, "I need to be owning these things and doing this because I create a lot of value for that guy." This is the greatest lesson. And I had, I'd learned a lot of things in school, out of books, but not practically, like when you learn accounting and you learn marketing and you learn finance and stuff like that, the dots don't really connect they hadn't connected, and they all connected during that time. And then, so obviously the building was going well, the owner was happy. He told, the company, that was a management company that I was working for, "This guy's the greatest." They took a notice in me and they said, "Would you get your real estate license? Would you like to work for us?" And that, moved me into the corporate office as a property manager. And that was my first and only job, actually. I did that for 8 years, managing a lot of properties up and down the Western United States for varying ownership partnerships, and all in different conditions. So, some were really brand new and new construction, and some were 100 years old and, just had all kinds of stuff.
Well, that's inspiring for those people that came from the same background. Russ and I share on the show all the time, like, my parents are pastors with the Salvation Army, so we did not have any money growing up. His mom was a school teacher. Dad was in construction. Same type of story. Now, talk about, and it's great you had that moment that it made sense. Like, I need to be on the other side of the desk. Like, that's amazing that you kind of put that together. But then what's the leap from being the guy that's making that guy successful to becoming the guy on the other? What was the next step in that journey?
Well, thanks. I think, you know, every room I was in, I always tried to be the one that was getting the most information from the people in that room. So I always, for whatever reason, was cognizant of that, you know, whether that was coaches or mentors or whatever. And so I found that I was really the problem with my mindset, how I grew up. You know, we can't afford it, scarcity mindset, which is fine. My parents are, obviously, they did a great job. But that was their mindset, still is today. I just knew that I had my own barriers that I had set on my own. And I was watching other people doing things. I'm like, well, why not me? You know, like, why can't I live there or have that? Or, you know, and so I just somehow thought I just had to break through my own stuff. I was scared to death, to be honest. I didn't know how to buy a property. I didn't know how to talk to an investor. I didn't know how to get debt. I didn't have a nickel. I didn't have a track record or anything like that. But when property management, one of the cool things that you do know is you know how to create value. So I had years of taking properties that were not performing well and making them perform well. Because in that business, what happens, you get fired. If somebody gives you an asset and says, we need you to manage it well, and you don't, you get fired. And that actually is fine with me. So I had to figure that out. So without even knowing it, I started to develop all these called the secret sauce of being able to see things in the rent roll, see things on the expense side, see things on the debt side, see things on the labor and materials and utilities and property taxes and insurance, and all of the things that make a property grow the net operating income or the NOI. So, you know, and you have to do that as a property manager. You have to take a look at the math is the math, you know, the financials tell the story. And so I started doing that. And so what I realized was that was powerful for people that had money. You know, they're like, oh, you can do that? I'm like, yeah, I could take this property and I can grow it to here, just like I had done so many times before. But as a W-2 or a property manager, I had done that, and that was my job. So I took pride in that. And of course, you know, I was up against all these, you know, finance guys in the property management world. You know, all these people had a little more, I would call them more thoroughbreds, you know, that were working at this firm. And then here's this scrappy guy that just, you know, was an on-site manager, you know, somehow got promoted. So I felt also I had to prove something to everybody. So I I was first one there, last one to leave, worked harder, just tried to do everything I did when I was a wrestler. And, and that's how I just apply that same thing with my life. And in all cases, my problem has been me, my own limited thinking.
Mindset is so important, right? I mean, we all come into this world and our environment shapes that thought process, but also the environment that you spend the rest of your life in can also define whether it will change or it will stay the same. As you started actually becoming an owner, right? My guess is you started changing the environment of people that you were spending time with. Talk a little bit about some of the lessons that you learned as you started acquiring assets, because you've acquired millions and millions of assets, hundreds of millions of assets. There's been tons of lessons along the way. But for someone who's kind of sitting there looking back at where you started, and maybe that's where they are today, they're trying to say, okay, all right, I need to work hard. I need to open my mindset. What is another lesson that you would have given to your former, you know, younger self?
Yeah. Well, I never ever started with money in mind. So not once. So I never started with, I want to make X amount of money. I obviously was just trying to, just like as a kid, I was just trying to provide milk money, or, you know, to provide some cash flow and all that kind of stuff. And what I realized is that as a property manager, I was only as good as the property was being managed, but as a real estate developer with passive income, I had a lot more stability. So I still could do that. But on the other side, I, instead of taking my money and just giving it away to Wall Street, to a financial planner or a wealth manager, let's say, I would rather, you know, I was managing my own money. I was buying, you know, I started with a 2-bedroom, 2-bath. I used my own, and that cash flowed. And then I bought another one and I bought another one, and then I didn't have any more money. And then I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to figure this out. And then I said, listen, I don't have any more money, but I bought these with my own, and I just need your money to be able to do it again. And then I put together a partnership. And so it started slow. And, you know, and again, I just used the exact same rinse and repeat model. It's literally look for about undervalued asset, create the value, go back and get refinance and return the money and keep the asset and move to the next one. And that's what I did. And I just, my buildings, my property started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Next thing I knew, I was in the, you know, buying these big projects, and we bought, we figured it out last year, I you know, somewhere around $3 billion so far. We own $2 billion right now, but I never started with money. I never started with the mindset. We don't sell, we're long-term holders. So, you know, obviously if I sold, it would be crazy, but I rather have the reoccurring revenue. I love the passive income. And you know what, then at some point, probably when I was in my 40s, I said, this is, you know, what it's done is it's giving me my time back. So having that reoccurring revenue, that passive income, gave me literally financial freedom to be able to spend time with my kids, and, you know, and my family, and go on trips and do stuff and then work when I want to work, as opposed to having to. And so, you know, I hit that probably 15 years ago, where, you know, I was financially free. And so from there, you know, I'm like, okay, how do I scale this, and how do I get bigger and better and all that kind of stuff? So it's just evolved over time. I didn't know how to hire a CFO, a CEO, a CIO, a CMO, or all the C's, you know, I didn't know any of that, but I just tried to figure it out with, you know, being around good groups of people. And forums and mentors and masterminds and stuff like that are very, very, very important, because, you know, I think the mistake a lot of people make, and Robert Kiyosaki talks a lot about this in his book, The Cashflow Quadrant, is you know, you got the ESBI, which a lot of people have seen. You know, when you run out of time and capacity, and then that keeps you small. So the minute you can leverage your time, get other people around, you know, delegate a little better. Also, I had to learn all that stuff. And then the final epiphany for me when I joined a group called YPO, which I'm in, been in for a long time, was, you know, when my buddy said it, it was so clear and so concise. He's like, you know, your business is actually, it shouldn't need you. You know, it should provide you everything you want, but you should not have to work in it. I'm like, so again, another mindset, you know, like, you're right. That's exactly what a business is for. It's so that if I want to come in, I can, like for stuff like this. You know, I was at the gym all morning, and, you know, I came in for this, for you guys, but I don't want to have to be here. I want the business to produce money so that when I show up, I can.
If you've listened to our show for any length of time, you've heard us talk about infinite banking and how we are able to use that concept to create over $50,000 a month in passive income. But it's just not that easy to figure out, how does this all connect into my own personal system?
Stallion, that's why we created the Passive Income Operating System, bro. It shows you how to turn active income into passive income. It makes all the steps come together. If you would like to get access to it as a podcast listener, we've never given this away in public before. Go to wealthwallstreet.com/POS. There was nothing worse than walking into class when you're in school and the teacher saying, pop quiz day. Why? Because you were unprepared. Are you unprepared though for financial freedom?
Don't be. Find out how close you are by taking our 30-second quiz at wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/quiz. I love that, Ken. Of course, you're speaking our language. Passive income greater than monthly expenses is the financial freedom formula that we live by, that we teach, that so many people are on the track with at Wealth Without Wall Street. Talk about the thing that just stuck out to me about what you just said is we hold on to our assets. We don't sell. Talk about the person. And we have operators that have different strategies as it relates to their investment strategy, and the investors should match the operator. Like their goals should be aligned. Otherwise, it's not a good fit. Talk about the people that work well in your deals because of that, and why, you know, you're different than a lot of the other operators that we talk to that have these short-term kind of value add and big exit type strategies.
So in my early 30s, I started buying properties and big ones, bigger, and I was doing condo conversions during this run. You know, it was awesome. So basically you take a 200 or 300 unit apartment property and you slice it up and you sell them off unit by unit. So let's say you buy it for 100 a door and you sell it for 200 a door. And I know that sounds crazy, but you could do that. So I did it a lot. So I did that. Vegas and Arizona, all the cities in Arizona. And so we did that on several thousand units. At the end of that, I had made a lot of money. I had paid a lot of tax and I worked my butt off for 10 years, basically, or maybe not complete, almost 10. And I had bigger houses, nicer stuff, but I didn't own any assets. Because I had sold them all off one by one. So for me, that was one big giant flip, you know, unit by unit. We were selling 50 units a month. I had a real estate company. I had a lending company and all that stuff, you know, soup to nuts. I was managing people, investors were buying them. So I bought the property, sold them off. And it was a great system. We made a lot of money. And, you know, we were at 200 or 300 people to run the whole thing. At the end, I was like, man, I just burned through my 30s and I go, I don't want to do that again. So now I'm going to put my other hat on and I'm going to do this passive income model. And that really was the difference for me it's a lot more disciplined. It's harder to do because obviously, you know, if Ross, my partner and I sold today, you know, I don't know what the number is, but it's, I don't know, 700, 800, 900 million in equity or something. You know, that would be nice, but then what do you do with it? You know, like, you know, split it up between a bunch of wealth managers and call them every day. So I'd rather have it in, you know, these assets that defer tax and, you know, and then create legacy issues like philanthropy and stuff like that. We hired a full-time director of philanthropy. She works for us full-time 7 or 8 years ago. We created a foundation and, you know, like when you do that kind of stuff and you build these things, you create legacy for your employees and you create legacy for your family. And there's a lot more you can do with that. Sure, you can have the money and buy, you know, I got everything I need, man. Like I really do, you know, so at some point it's just ridiculous to have so much.
Well, it's good to hear that there's problems at all levels, right? I heard you say we're going to create legacy issues. That's it. Some people stop at just the legacy. We're going to create a legacy. You say we're going to create legacy issues, which what a great issue to have is what you've been able to build. And also just to know that, too, that you're creating that cash flow that's going to last for a long time. Ken, when people listen to our podcast, we say all the time, our objective is to help people who want to become financially free get there faster. And there's three ways that we do it. And one of those ways is becoming a better investor. Obviously, you're one of the best investors out there. You've been successful. Your track record speaks for itself. Talk a little bit about the math. You said that a second ago. You know, it always comes down to the math, being able to look at the financials, being able to see what makes a deal work and what makes a deal not. Help someone on a basic level, if you would, talk about what that math actually looks like for them.
Sure. Well, I think there's a lot of biases people have on stuff, whatever that is, you know. So you look at people that are flippers or hard money people, or, you know, single family fix and flips, or maybe they're self storage people or whatever, you know, they're super biased and they have blinders on a lot, which I'm fine with. But what happens is they ignore what I would call the red flags that are all around. They ignore supply issues. They ignore migration issues. They ignore population trends. They ignore interest rate issues. They ignore cost of equity, cost of debt, you know, whatever, you know, tax stuff. And to be really, 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 really good at what you do, you have to keep an open mind on all those things. And you have to be really transparent and authentic about what the truth is, because there's truth and there's reality, and people's reality doesn't necessarily make the truth. So that's the first thing. And so what happens a lot of times is I always stick to the truth is the math. So, you know, if I've got something that's 50% occupied and I want it to be 100 like everyone, the truth is, can that market support that? Period. If it either can or can't. And you know, if it can, then great. What are the rents going to be? What's the income going to look like? And all that kind of stuff. So finding an opportunity that's 50% vacant in a market that's 100% occupied, that's an opportunity. That's the truth. Okay, now that market can change. I get it. But it's not a perception. It's not a reality. It's not something you put on a business plan to try to raise money. You know, it is or it isn't. The truth is what it is. And so that's number one. Expenses, same thing. What is it going to cost me to run this thing? How much marketing am I going to need? How much is the insurance? How much is the property tax? What's my capital needs? All that stuff, once you figure out all that, it is what it is. And then now you have the cash flow, the true cash flow. Now, the property might not be doing that. That's different. But that's where creative management comes in. That's where you come in and say, listen, I tell all my managers, you know, we've got about 10,000 apartments. I say, listen, do you believe that you should be at least at market? And they all say yes. I say, okay, then that's my expectation. I'm not asking them to outperform market, although many of them do. I'm like, that's where I set the bar. So if the market in Austin, Texas is 90% occupancy and they're at 85, they're in trouble. If they're at 95, I pat them on the back and I give them bonuses. And that's that simple. So for me, it just boils down to math. So, and you can't hide from it. You can't hide from how much money did the property generate. You know, the cool part about financials, sellers' financials or property history, is that it's like real numbers going to the bank. You know, you can get tax returns and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes it's harder than others, but you just follow that math and that logic. And then you just got to say, can I make it better or not? And that's it. And so that's how I look at everything. And then and once you do that, then you layer in the investor. Okay. So if I do that, is the investor going to make money? And so, you know, every investor wants what I would call a value add. And it doesn't have to be, you know, buying something old and making it new. There's lots of inefficiencies that happen in a property at all levels. And so we just try to employ those concepts. And literally, we literally stick to math. I mean, I have investment calls every Tuesday with my investment committee. And we just are always solving to the investor need, period. The property has to produce, because the property is the only thing that pays everybody. So you have to buy it correctly, and then it needs to produce what it produces. And what I find is that people skew those numbers. They're a little too, you know, they call it puffery. You know, they're a little too optimistic in the income, or they're a little too scarce on the expenses. And that typically, and sometimes they do that to raise equity, which is, you know, it's a very short-term way to think.
When you're looking at the future, right, as we start to wrap this up, we really appreciate you sharing so much with our audience. you start looking at the next, you know, we're recording this in the middle of 2023 and looking at over the next 18 months, maybe 36 months, what excites you? Where do you see opportunity, and where are you waiting for those windows to open to be able to go through?
Yeah. So I think a lot of times, you know, luckily I'm a little older than most people. So what that's done for me is it's enabled me to go through a couple different cycles. So in the late 80s, I was just coming out of school and, you know, things were different there. And then of course there's some stuff in the 90s, and then in 08, we saw a big pop. Well, you know, so I learned through all of that. And so what happens is, in, you know, if you bought anything in the last 5, 6, 7 years, all you've ever seen is this, you know? And so for me, I always make the most money on the buy. And so I, you know, when cheap money hit, and that's really what drove asset prices up. So when now that the Fed has increased their federal funds rate, it's actually driving prices down. It doesn't matter to me because I'm a long-term holder. So I don't really care what my equity is from year to year, as long as it produces cash flow. So I have a very different view on the way the property is supposed to provide cash flow. I'm not trying to exit and time something. So what I see now, to answer your question directly, is we're starting to see the asset prices come down as a result of higher interest rates. It's normal. My entire career was based on 6-7% interest rates. I mean, literally, if you go back and look, what we just came through was a gift. But if you started, you know, let's say 7 or 8 years ago, then, you know, what you're heading into looks very bad. But for me, I'm like, I'm glad these 3% days are over because we need a price adjustment. And then we can buy again, again, just solving the cash flow. So that's what I'm excited about is, I don't, of course, want anybody to lose anything at any time. But there's a lot of people that have made some bad decisions based on timing. So they buy something and they want it to be X 3 years, 4 years later. It's not going to be X. You know, there, you know, I looked at a property Tuesday, 400 some unit building that, you know, was quietly being shopped, wasn't even listed, that I, after calculating, I'm like, well, it's not even worth the debt today. Now, if rates go down, that could change. But today, based on a seller buying the property with today's interest rates, it's not worth the debt. So in that case, all the LPs are gone. They don't know they're gone, but they're gone because no one's going to, a seller buys on cash flow too. And the cash flow today at 6% interest rates is a lot different than cash flow at 3%. So I'm looking for a little distress coming from people that have bought whatever. It could be office, retail, industrial, self-storage, or multifamily. We're looking at all that stuff moving forward.
That's super interesting to just know the market is going to produce opportunities. And it's awesome to hear from somebody who's been through all those and to give us a vision of what's coming. And man, I just appreciate you being willing to come on, Ken, and share with our audience, because there's so many people that are Ken in college right now.
Yeah.
Having the mindset, not seeing the opportunity, but knowing that there's gotta be something more. There's gotta be. And then even fast forward to Ken in his late 30s and realizing the real answer is not income. The real answer is not a big lump sum of money. It's cash flow. It's passive income and freedom. And man, that's like the whole journey of our people. So thank you for being willing to come on. For those in our community that want to connect with you, Ken, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. Well, my website is kenmacroy.com, but you know, if they want to meet me, the next event I'm going to be at in Scottsdale is June 15th, 16th, and 17th. It's called limitlessexpo.com. And we have 40 speakers there talking about not just real estate, but all kinds of things, you know, ways to, you know, side hustles, you know, because right now it's not a good time to buy real estate. So the question should be, what else should I be looking at and why? And so that's what Limitless is. So I created it last year We sold out. We had 1,500 people there. We had 40 speakers. I think we got more than 40 this year, but we got Kiyosaki, we got Dennis Prager, we got Chris Voss, we got Patrick Bet-David, we got Chris Martinson. We have all these people that are going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. And I think that, you know, for your listeners that want to come, we got a promo code, just MC50, MC50, and they get 50% off. And, you know, the tickets are, I think, well, come May, they'll be about $2,000. So they go up May 1st, and then they go up again June 1st. So anyway, that would be a great way. I'd love to shake people's hands, help encourage them on their journey. I'll let them know they're not alone. You know, it sometimes does feel that way. But at this conference, you're going to find a lot of people trying to find answers to what's, you know, where this is all heading and things that we can do. Even me, I'm trying to find out what's going on with the dollar, what's going on with gold, what's going on with bricks, what's going on with tax, what's going on. All that stuff. And if I'm not investing in real estate, what could I be doing now? And what should I be doing now? So that's what this conference is for.
So cool. Ken, thank you again for coming on the show. It's been such a pleasure to spend time with you.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Always good chatting with you.
All right. You got to hear it. And we want you to take action. So just like Ken said, go to limitlessexpo.com. You got a promo code MC50. If you want to find out anything, whether it's a side hustle, investing in real estate, tax, he said Chris Voss, one of my new favorite books out there, Never Split the Difference, right? How to be a better negotiator, which is great in any level of business that you're in. That would be a great event for you to attend. And we'll make sure we get that in the show notes as well as post that inside the community. If you haven't had time to rate and review the show, do that now and share it with somebody else so that they too can gain value from this episode. Thank you for listening. Have an amazing day.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.